This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Film director John Frankenheimer has directed a new glasnost thriller called The Fourth War. Frankenheimer is known for his political thrillers, including The Train, 7 Days in May, and The Manchurian Candidate. Frankenheimer first made a name for himself in his 30s, directing live TV drama. He directed the series Playhouse 90 for 6 years in the mid-1950s. One of his shows was the highly acclaimed drama The Days of Wine and Roses. During his first years in film in the late 50s and early 60s, he became the favored director of Burt Lancaster, directing him in 5 films, including The Birdman of Alcatraz. Frankenheimer's other movies include French Connection 2, The Fixer, Black Sunday, and 52 Pickup. Frankenheimer describes his new film, The Fourth War, as being about dinosaurs of the Cold War.
The movie has as its basic premise a story of 2 men, 2 warriors, really, 2 highly decorated military heroes who find themselves in a time of glasnost where there's no war to fight. They've been trained all their lives that the other is the enemy, and suddenly there is no enemy. There is no war. And they don't know, I mean, this is a very, very real problem, a very serious problem in this time that we find ourselves today. In peace, in relative peace, in glasnost, in a time of détente, what do you do with these men that you've trained all their lives to be the military heroes, to be the Audie Murphys, to be the war heroes? And what do you do with them now that there is no war? And that's the problem that this picture poses. I don't think we give an answer, but that's what we pose.
Well, the movie was made a few months before the recent events in Eastern Europe, like the opening of the wall in Germany. When you were probably watching on TV the opening of the wall, what were you thinking about in terms of the film? How did you think that was going to affect the timeliness of your movie?
My feeling was, thank God we made this movie. We had anticipated all that stuff happening, not quite to the dramatic way that it did, but we certainly talk about the changes that are happening and the fact that things are not any longer what they are, and our character is unable to change. Both of our characters are unable to change, and that's their flaw. And that's what makes the movie possible.
You've done several films about the military, 7 Days in May, The Manchurian Candidate. You went to military school as a child, right?
Yes, it's true.
Did you feel like that gave you insights into the military mind at all?
Yes, I do. And I also was a lieutenant in the Air Force, and I was General LeMay's personal photographer during the Korean War and things like that. And yes, I do. I feel that it's given me a tremendous insight into the military mind, especially on higher levels, because I was around general officers a lot. And it's helped me.
When you were General LeMay's personal photographer during the Korean War, what did that entail?
Well, it entailed photographing the general quite a bit. It entailed
right.
It entailed also doing some training films. I was in the Air Photographic Squadron that did a lot of training films in the United States. That's how I started, actually.
Started making movies?
Yeah.
Well, did you prefer making documentary films for the military to fighting?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not a fool. I mean, I'm not crazy. Yeah, I loved it.
John Frankenheimer is my guest, and his movies include The Manchurian Candidate, French Connection 2, 52 Pickup, Black Sunday, and the new film, The Fourth War, which stars Roy Scheider and Harry Dean Stanton and is scheduled to open on March 23rd. I want to ask you a little bit about The Manchurian Candidate, which I think is just a really extraordinary movie. You were the co-producer of the movie. I assume that means that you were one of the people who were behind making it, as opposed to a director who was brought on after the idea.
Yes,
was already in effect.
Yes. In this particular case, George Axelrod and I bought the book. We developed it, and then I ended up directing it, of course.
How did Sinatra get involved with the movie?
Well, Sinatra was the whole element that made the movie possible. The movie had been turned down by every studio in town. And when George Axelrod and I bought the book, we bought it by buying the book in a bookstore. It had been optioned and reoptioned and dropped and never been able to be made. And we knew that Frank Sinatra had read the book and Frank Sinatra was interested in the picture, but he had never really gone the whole 9 yards and optioned it. So we optioned it, and without a script, Frank Sinatra committed to it. And, of course, as soon as he committed to it, we had the necessary financing to make the movie.
Did you have any idea he'd be as good as he was in it? I mean, did you have as much faith in his acting abilities when you started?
No. I didn't want to make the movie with Frank Sinatra. I was scared of it. I had heard he was very difficult. I had heard that he treated directors badly. All those things. I expressed these reservations to George Axelrod, and he said, "Look," he said, "I'm going to make the movie with Frank Sinatra, whether you do it or whether you don't." He said, "I'll buy you out, but I want to make this movie with Sinatra. Sinatra is going to get this picture made, and if you have problems with Sinatra," he said, "I would suggest that you discuss them with him, instead of discussing them with me." And I made an appointment to see Mr. Sinatra. I went up to see him at his house, and I expressed my reservations to him. And he said, "Look, I guarantee you, whether what you've heard is true, whether what you've heard is not true, there is my side to all that, too." He said, "I want to do this picture. I want to work with you, and I feel that we're going to get along just fine." And that was the last discussion we ever had. We got along absolutely fabulously. I loved working with Frank Sinatra. It was a joy making that picture. It was one of the happiest experiences in my life making that picture, and I loved everything that Sinatra did. I mean, he was just a joy to work with, and we've been close friends ever since.
Hmm. There's a scene I have to ask you about. It's really an extraordinary scene. This is the garden club dream scene. Frank Sinatra is having these recurring nightmares in which he's with all of the men from his army troop from the Korean War. He's with them at a ladies' garden club, and suddenly the ladies' garden club turns into a lot of Korean soldiers, and the head Korean soldier is discussing how he's brainwashing these soldiers into believing that they're at a garden party. And then to show how brainwashed they really are, he has Lawrence Harvey just walk over and strangle to death one of the men. You shot that scene in such a disorienting way. The camera just kind of revolves around all the women of the garden club first, and then suddenly the women are transformed into men, and you're as confused as Frank Sinatra is by all of this. Tell me about how you decided to shoot this scene.
Well, number one, the idea of the scene came right out of Richard Condon's book. He described pretty well what the scene should look like. So it was up to me to interpret it. And the shot that you're talking about is a 360-degree shot, which starts on the stage of a hotel in New Jersey where a woman is talking about hydrangeas, and we pan around the room, and you think that it's just women listening to this, a garden club. And then as the camera completes its 360-degree arc, you suddenly find yourself on a stage in an amphitheater in Korea, and the Chinese psychiatrist is talking about brainwashing. So what we did was, we designed a set that could be moved, and it took a little athletic ability from the actors to run from one platform to the other while we were back on the garden club. And the two platforms were on a kind of a railroad track, and we slid one right in place as the camera moved off the first one. But what it did was it set in the audience's mind that this was not just the magic in the movies, that something very strange here was happening, because we never cut. And the audience realizes when you cut. They might not know what it is, but they know that there's been some mechanical device put between them and the story. And I wanted to do it all in one shot. And I think after we accomplished that shot, then we were able to cut to anything that we wanted to do. And we filmed that sequence with about 7 or 8 different combinations. The women in Korea, the Chinese Manchurian delegates in New Jersey, the actors on the New Jersey stage, hotel, the actors in the Korean amphitheater. And we were able to intercut it at will, back and forth. And after the first shot, the suspension of disbelief with the audience was complete. So we were able to kind of manipulate them back and forth whenever we wanted to. And you're right, we did cut it in such a way that it was confusing, and deliberately so.
Now, one of the black men from this same troupe that Sinatra was in has the same dream. But when he has the dream, all of the women from the ladies' club are black. Was that in the novel, or is that your invention, to have the two people have their own version of this same dream?
That was me. What I never did do, I mean, I had it done, but I just didn't dare take the shot of it. In the back of the room, we had a white bellboy. But we never did show it. If you look carefully, you can see it.
That's great. It's a wonderful... It's wonderful the way you contrast the two dreams.
You know, I want to tell you one other thing about that movie. That's something that I don't think people are aware of, but I think it's important to say in these days and times, which is that was one of the first movies where the producer and director used a black actor to play a part that was not written for a black.
Uh-huh.
Today it's done quite often, but that was very new at the time, to take the black actor, cast him as the psychiatrist, and that part was not written for a black actor. I've since done it quite a bit, but I just wanted to bring that up.
John Frankenheimer is my guest. The movie was released in 1962. This was just before the Kennedy assassination. The Manchurian Candidate was out of circulation for 26 years. It was re-released in 1987. I know Frank Sinatra was a friend of Kennedy. Is that why the movie was out of circulation for so long?
No.
It had nothing to do with the assassination?
No.
What is the story?
The story is basically one of greed, of money, as most American stories are. The movie was out of circulation for the simple reason that United Artists carried the movie through a complicated process of Chinese bookkeeping, totally in the red for years and years and years. They had it cross-collateralized with every other movie that Frank Sinatra had made for United Artists. And we were so far in the red that if we had been E.T. and re-released, we would have been in the red. And when this movie finished its run, which was before the president's assassination, there were no ancillary markets as you know them today. There was no tape. There was no cable. There just wasn't anything like that. And what there was network television and then syndicated television. Then you went into the archives, which all these movies did. And in fact, The Manchurian Candidate did play on network television one time around. However, what they failed to realize was that in 1970, the rights reverted to Frank Sinatra, the rights for re-release. They had just thrown this in as a bone in his contract to get him to agree to other things. And it was the best thing in the world for us, because what happened was that a market was developed for the movie. I mean, the press loved the movie. The media loved the movie. And the more people talked about the movie, the less it became possible to see it. And what happened was, finally, there was a management in place at United Artists for 25 minutes or long enough for us to negotiate a deal with them so that we could start out from scratch, and we were neither in the red nor in the black, to re-release the movie, and that's what we did. And it turned out very nicely for all of us.
John Frankenheimer is my guest. He directed the films The Manchurian Candidate, French Connection 2, Birdman of Alcatraz, 52 Pickup, and Black Sunday. His new film is called The Fourth War, and it stars Roy Scheider, Harry Dean Stanton, and Jürgen
Prochnow.
Thank you.
It's okay. And you might also add that Jürgen is the actor who was in that wonderful German movie Das Boot. He played the submarine captain in that.
He was also very good in Dry White Season.
He was, wasn't he?
Yes, yeah, he really was. You were good friends with Bobby Kennedy, and I believe you were with him the night that he was assassinated.
Yes, I was.
And he was supposed to go to your house afterwards. I think you were working with him on campaign ads.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, he was staying at my house, actually, and I drove him to the Ambassador Hotel, and I had done his film and television during his campaign, yes.
What effect did it have on you when he was assassinated?
Terrible. Really, honest to God, Terry, terrible. I had, in layman's terms, a nervous breakdown. I moved to Europe. I stayed in Europe for 7 years after that. It just was really, it was a terrible traumatic effect on me.
Was it because... I mean, I guess I understand why, but was it because you were that close or because of the suddenness and because of the assassination?
All of it.
Yeah.
I was close to him. I honestly believed, and I had let myself be totally convinced that this man would have been a superb president of the United States, and I honestly believe that to this day. And to see that all shattered in that one horrible moment was just more than I could accept. I mean, I had a very bad time after it.
So you left the States for a while?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I know it was because of that. I let it be. I kind of made believe it was for other reasons, but that was basically what the reason was.
And how did that affect your movie career? I mean, you weren't here making movies for several years.
No, but I made movies in Europe, and I made some good ones.
Which ones did you make in Europe?
Well, I made The Fixer. I made a movie called The Horseman. I made Impossible Object. French Connection 2.
That was in Europe?
Yeah.
Oh, of course, it was in France. What am I thinking? I just think of that as an American film.
Well,
right.
Good. But I mean, yeah, the whole thing took place in Marseille.
Right.
And I had a pretty active career over there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to ask you about French Connection 2. The way I understand it, Gene Hackman called you, said they want to do a sequel to French Connection 1. Why did he call you?
Well, number one, he didn't.
Okay. Tell me the real story.
The real story is that I had a story and Fox had a title. 20th Century Fox had a commitment with Gene Hackman, and they had a title, French Connection 2.
Uh-huh.
They had no story. I had a very, very interesting story, which was a narcotics cop being turned into a drug addict. And I thought, and I couldn't get it made, and I thought, wait a minute, this could work for French Connection 2. And I went to 20th Century Fox, and we sold them the idea of this story. And they loved it. And then we sold it to Gene Hackman, with whom I had worked on the Gypsy Moths some years before.
Yeah, well, what happens is, you know, Hackman goes to Marseille to track down the head of this drug ring, and they end up shooting him up with heroin and getting him addicted, and then he has to go through cold turkey. Tell me about the dramatic possibilities you saw in the story that you created here of having the narcotics agent become an addict himself.
Well, I thought it was... I love irony, and I thought that was the ultimate irony, especially to have Popeye Doyle become a drug addict, a cop that was so against this and was so adamant that he would never do this kind of thing, and to have this happen to him. And then, of course, Hackman is such a wonderful actor. The idea of having Hackman go through this whole cold turkey withdrawal was something that I thought the possibilities were endless, and I think he was brilliant in those scenes, incidentally.
Film director John Frankenheimer is my guest, director of the movies The Manchurian Candidate, French Connection 2, Black Sunday, and a new film called The Fourth War. Well, some of your early work was in live television doing dramas. You did a lot of Playhouse 90s.
I did, yes. I did 153 live television shows.
Yeah, that's really a lot. Was there a lot of improvising required on your part as a director? If something would go wrong, you'd have to just kind of follow through on it.
Strangely, in the 153 shows that I did, very few things ever went wrong. We went into the shows very, very well prepared. Don't forget, we rehearsed in most of those shows for over 3 weeks. We had 4 days on camera. We had a highly, highly trained and expert camera crew. Every shot was predetermined. Every shot was thought out. Every shot had been marked in my script long before we ever got on camera. The most horrendous things that ever happened to me in live television was when I was an assistant director and not in control of my own destiny. I remember when I was an assistant director and Eva Marie Saint and Francis L. Sullivan were on this show, and they were supposed to be flying 50,000 feet above the Himalayas and be crash land and be rescued by these Chinese ski troops. We were in this set, which was about the size of a postage stamp with the two actors. And suddenly, Francis L. Sullivan, who was making his live television debut, just went up. I mean, he just couldn't remember his lines. It was supposed to be 50,000 feet above the Himalayas, and he just looked into the camera and he said, my stop. He says, I think I'll get off. And he just got and he walked off the set. And we cut to the camera one, which was on the commercial announcer, and there was no sound on the commercial announcer. And you saw him talking to the agency man, and over this you heard this English accent saying, 40 years in this bloody business, and oh, I've never got up. And suddenly the sound came on over the commercial announcer, and he starts doing the Armstrong Cork commercial. I mean, it was just an unbelievable mess, at which point I was on the phone to Master Control in New York. And we were doing it from New York, and I said, look, you've got to take us off the air. There's nothing we can do now. It's just gone. Do anything. Just run a movie, anything. And they did take us off the air. That's the only time that that's ever happened. But that was as an assistant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. My guest is film director John Frankenheimer. And one of the things you've been doing lately is some commercials, or at least one commercial that I'm familiar with, the French Bicentennial commercial.
Yeah.
And Well, there's several versions of it. I've seen short versions, and I've seen the long version. The long version is, I think, close to 3 minutes, and it's a little story on film. Describe the story.
Well, the story is basically a news correspondent who's sent over to cover the bicentennial, but just before he goes, he realizes he's going to miss his parents' 50th wedding anniversary, and he remembers a photograph taken of them when they were married in France at a little restaurant, and when he's in France, he phones his wife to fax over the picture, and he tries to find the restaurant, and indeed he does find the restaurant, and he invites the family over, and they celebrate the 50th anniversary in France at that little restaurant.
This is one of the longest commercials I've ever seen, the long version of it.
Yeah, it is. It's about 3 minutes, as you said.
What led you into doing commercials? And well, how long have you been doing them?
Well, I did quite a few commercials when I was living in Europe. It's quite common for movie directors to do commercials when you live in France and when you live in London. And I like doing commercials. I love doing commercials, as a matter of fact. I mean, I love the idea of having to compress time to get it into that, to tell a story in that short period of time, because that's basically the, that's one of the big changes in directing movies over the years, and the fact that the audiences strangely have become less literate in the fact that you really are basing, a lot of the audience doesn't read, but they have become more visually aware. In other words, they really, because of the MTVs, because of constant exposure to television and so forth, they understand visual images a lot better than they did 20 years ago. And you can compress time and you can compress transitions and you don't have to spend as much screen time trying to explain something visually as you did before. And of course, doing commercials is one of the best things in the world to train you to condense what you're trying to do. I mean, after I did that AT&T commercial, I went back and looked at Fourth War and cut 7 minutes out of it.
Really?
Yeah.
It became clear to you what was excess in it?
Yeah. I mean, suddenly I realized I didn't need this, and this. It just became a lot tighter and a lot cleaner.
Huh. Do you know what your next project will be after the Fourth War?
I do. It's called Year of the Gun. It's a picture that I'm going to be doing for Ed Pressman Productions. Ed's a very successful independent producer. And we film it in Rome starting in August. It's a thriller.
Well, great. I wish you the best with your new movies, and I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been John Frankenheimer, and his new movie, The Fourth War, will be opening on March 23rd. He also directed The Manchurian Candidate, French Connection 2, Birdman of Alcatraz, Black Sunday, and 52 Pickup, just to name a few. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.